Our next speaker is Professor Pat Hojava from Rutgers. He will be speaking on digital entropy and string theory.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here. Can you hear me? I think the appropriate title for my talk would probably be Searching for the Sitter Space in String Theory. It's based on some work in progress, very much in progress, with Vijay Balasubramanian and George Minich. So as you will see, our results are somewhat inconclusive, and I think my collaborators should not be blamed for any misconceptions I'll present, but of course should be given credit for all the good ideas. Let me start with giving some general motivation for for our project. Of course, many recent or several recent astrophysical and cosmological observations suggest that we actually live in a universe which is well approximated by space-times with a small but non-zero positive cosmological constant, or the Sitter space. Since string theory is supposed to be a complete quantum theory of gravity, it should possibly revolutionize cosmology to the extent similar to the revolution that took place, inspired by string theory, in other fields of physics, in quantum field theory, where string theory, of course, gave us many new tools and concepts in non-perturbative quantum field theory, or recently in high energy phenomenology, where large extra dimensions inspired by string theory have become very popular and a very interesting scenario for particle phenomenology and also mathematics. So I think it's not implausible that the next revolution might come in cosmology, but before we can actually come up with new revolutionary concepts in cosmology and string theory, we should at least be able to understand the old concepts, such as, for example, whether or not it's possible in string theory to describe the quantum mechanics of the Sitter spaces, or more generally, spaces with positive cosmological constant. In this talk, I'll be relying on many partial results obtained by a huge number of people searching for various aspects of this story in string theory and elsewhere. I'll be mentioning just a few names along the way, but there are many others that I don't really have time to mention, so I apologize for that. What other reasons, in addition to possible relevance to the real world, do we have for studying the Sitter space or spaces with positive cosmological constant in string theory? There are various theoretical reasons, such as the existence of the horizon in the Sitter space and related issues of holography and how that is compatible with the apparent locality of the observed physics, and also issues of supersymmetry breaking, which are crucial for making contact with the real world and also inherently relevant for spaces with positive cosmological constant, as I'll review in a few minutes. But of course, the main motivation might come from the fact that we may well live in a world with a positive cosmological constant. So let me start by reviewing a few features of the Sitter spacetimes. The De Sitter spacetime, of course, is a maximally symmetric solution of Einstein's equations with a positive cosmological constant, generally in D spacetime dimensions. If you focus for a minute on De Sitter 4, you can represent it as a hyperboloid in a 4,1 dimensional flat space, given by the obvious equation here. Of course, that implies that the isometric group of the serial space in four dimensions is SO4,1, or generally SOD,1 in these space-time dimensions. And the metric can be written in several suitable coordinate systems. So let me go over some of these that might be interesting from various perspectives. First of all, in this, if you write the serial metric in this form, this is the standard cosmological way of writing the solution of Einstein's equations, t being the global time that parameterizes the time evolution along the hyperboloid, and the omega 3 is the volume of the space 3 sphere. And there is a cosmological evolution factor, which is t-dependent in these coordinates. So the space-like slices are around 3 spheres. There are, of course, other possible ways of writing the same metric while keeping the standard cosmological form, where the coefficient in front of the dt squared term is equal to minus 1. And in one such form, your space-like slices are flat, and the evolution is purely exponential. This coordinate system covers only one half of the full hyperboloid. And of course, in this coordinate system, the description of the De Sitter space is directly relevant to describing inflation. And there is another coordinate system that you can use for the De Sitter space, in which you foliate by hyperboloids, not by flat spaces or spheres. And in that case, the cosmological evolution parameter goes like sinh squared. So which of these coordinate systems is most relevant for describing or trying to invent some quantum mechanics of De Sitter space? Since quantum mechanics requires observers, one might be tempted to consider the following context. Consider an inertial observer in the De Sitter space, say, sitting at the pole of the sphere. And given this observer, there is a natural coordinate system which has the metric appearing in a static form. This coordinate system covers, well, this coordinate system leads to the following form of the metric and covers the so-called static patch of the De Sitter space if you restrict yourself to values of r smaller than the radius, the characteristic radius of the De Sitter space, L. There is a static Killing vector d by dt, which is associated with the geodesic of the observer. And that Killing vector, of course, becomes null at values of r equal to the scale of the De Sitter space. So in this coordinate system, there's a natural horizon associated with this Killing vector. And this is the famous cosmological horizon of De Sitter spaces. So one way of seeing how things work out in this coordinate system is by looking at the Penrose diagram, in which these blue arrows indicate the static Killing vector d by dt, and these two blue lines correspond to the horizons, and this is the static patch of the inertial observer evolving along r equals 0 here. There is a very useful picture to keep in mind in this coordinate system. If you look at the static metric in these coordinates, then you realize that for the inertial observer sitting here, the space-like slices, spaces of constant t here, look like hemispheres with round metric on them. In other words, the De Sitter space from this point of view in the static coordinate system for the inertial observer looks like a finite cavity surrounded by a horizon. So you can represent this by, of course, the metric is static. These are static coordinates. So you can think of the static portion of the De Sitter space associated with the given observer as a hemisphere that's constant, whose metric is constant in time, and time flows more slowly as you get closer to the edge of the hemisphere. So this is a heuristic picture of how it's probably useful to think about De Sitter spaces. And since coordinate changes typically involve scales very high as the Planck scale or higher in some regions of space-time, it may make a difference which coordinate system you use to describe the quantum mechanics, the hypothetical quantum mechanics of a given space-time. And I believe that if the quantum mechanics of the De Sitter space makes sense, it probably should make sense in these static coordinates, in this static picture of a finite cavity system. And this is related to a few observations that I would like to review very briefly. First of all, since the De Sitter space exhibits a horizon, there's an entropy associated with it through the Bekenstein-Hawking formula, as shown first by Gibbons and Hawking. And of course, that scales in some way with the cosmological constant. And there is a temperature associated with this space. One approach to seeing this, of course, as is usual in semi-classical gravity, is to Euclideanize things. And the Euclideanization of the De Sitter space is, again, most transparent in the static coordinates, where here the red hemisphere is the space-like cavity of the Lorentzian De Sitter. If you Euclideanize time, what you get is a periodic time coordinate, which you have to identify with periodicity determining the temperature, and that's, again, given by the inverse radius of the De Sitter space and the smoothness at the horizons. At the horizon determines the periodicity of this Euclidean geometry, and of course the Euclidean De Sitter, as is very well known, is a sphere. So this is a round sphere in D dimensions for the Euclidean D-dimensional De Sitter space, and the horizon corresponds to the fixed points of the Killing vector corresponding to the Euclidean time evolution. The Euclidean time evolution here looks like the rotation of the sphere. Therefore, the horizon corresponds to the codimension 2 sphere, a large codimension 2 sphere on this three-dimensional sphere. Since the De Sitter space can be associated an entropy and a temperature, this immediately brings various obvious issues, such as, does this entropy have a statistical mechanical interpretation? String theory has been instrumental in providing a statistical mechanical explanation for black hole entropy in many, mostly supersymmetric cases. And this cosmological horizon, for all purposes, behaves very similarly to the black hole horizons. So one is tempted to speculate that the entropy should also have some statistical mechanical interpretation. And of course, that is directly relevant through the Bekenstein bound and its analogs to the issues of holography. How do you describe the quantum mechanics of a system which is surrounded by a finite horizon? So what would we call the quantum mechanics of the De Sitter space? I mentioned the successes of string theory in black hole physics, and I also mentioned that more often than not, these were tied to supersymmetry or closeness to supersymmetry. This would be very difficult to generalize to the De Sitter space for the following reason. De Sitter spaces are believed to be incompatible with supersymmetry, incompatible with in the following sense. First of all, the De Sitter superalgebras, of course, do exist, but they don't have any highest weight unitary representation, and therefore they make any multi-particle interpretation of Hilbert spaces and so on and so forth very difficult, if not impossible. But it can be represented by fields described by a supergravity Lagrangian. So there is a formal supergravity Lagrangian associated with Desider superalgebras, first written down in the case of Desider 4 by Pilksonius and von Ebbinghausen. But this, all these points exhibit various bad features. So let me first go over the bad part. First of all, about the Desider superalgebra, instead of the nice relation which essentially tells you that Q squared goes like the Hamiltonian or the time translation generator, as in the ADS case or flat space, the supersymmetry algebra for Desider satisfies a bizarre equation where QQ bar summed over all supercharges equals zero. This is a very strange formula that, first of all, doesn't allow us to prove any positive energy theorems known from ADS or flat space using standard supersymmetry arguments. Second of all, since there are no highest weight representation, unitary representations, it would be extremely difficult to make sense of any multi-particle interpretation of Hilbert spaces carrying such Desider superalgebras. So this would seem to be an algebraic reason why it's impossible to have quantum mechanics with positive energy associated with Desider superspaces. And the third point here has a very bad feature pointed out already by these authors a long time ago. In the Lagrangian, there are ghosts. In other words, there are gauge fields which have the opposite sign of their kinetic term when compared to any physical gauge field. And this is, of course, a disaster. But all these comments can be turned into hints of perhaps some good news also. So first of all, let me go back to the superalgebra. It was shown by these authors in the case of Desider 4, and we believe it generalizes to other cases, that the R symmetry that's required by the formal requirement of the existence of the supergravity Lagrangian and so on has to be, in the maximally supersymmetric case, equal to the non-compact SO 6,2 group. That's very suggestive of something, and I'll get to that point on the next transparency or slightly afterward. The second point, the fact that it would be perhaps impossible to have an infinite Fock space, multi-particle Fock space, with this Desider algebra, superalgebra represented on it. Well, holography perhaps suggests that since there is a finite horizon surrounding the system, that it is a finite cavity, perhaps a finite number, n, of degrees of freedom should be sufficient to describe all the physics that goes on inside the Desider space, at least from the point of view of the inertial observer who defines the horizons. And therefore, this limitation perhaps is not so drastic. And third of all, the fact that there are ghosts in the Lagrangian and this observation that QQ bar summed over all supercharges equals zero and not the energy are somewhat suggestive or reminiscent of topological theories where perhaps the appropriate role for these fields could perhaps be that they are some sort of ghosts of some underlying symmetry, reducing the number of degrees of freedom from the naive multi-particle Fock space to some finite number n of quasi-topological degrees of freedom. So from this transparency, you see that it's probably premature to conclude that there is no quantum mechanics of Desider spaces, but we don't really know how to construct one. So if you take the horizon associated with the inertial observer seriously and try to make sense of the quantum mechanics of the Desider space, I think it should be done in the static patch, and the horizon should really be taken seriously. And I presented a few arguments. This picture is very similar to the one that has been advocated by Tom Banks over the years, so that definitely deserves mentioning. First of all, If we believe in holography, then the natural generalization of the Bekenstein bound would suggest that a finite number of degrees of freedom should be sufficient to describe the physics inside this cavity, the quantum gravity inside this static patch of the Sitter space. One more supporting reason comes from the observation made relatively long time ago by Abbott and Deser. The Killing vector of the static patch, d by dt, allows one to define Killing energy associated with it. And somewhat surprisingly, even though there is no global positive energy theorem everywhere in the Sitter space associated with this Killing energy, there is at least a perturbative positive energy theorem associated with this Killing vector as long as you only consider excitations inside the cavity. All the violations of positive energy theorem would be excitations living behind the horizon. And from the point of view of holography, one might question the very existence of such degrees of freedom. Perhaps what's there is just what's inside the cavity, and the horizon screens, the horizon represents the holographic screen of the theory. And therefore, whatever would naively live behind the horizon is perhaps another gauge copy of the same degrees of freedom, but should not be treated as independent additional degrees of freedom. This Killing energy, of course, is a conserved energy, and therefore one hopes that this could be turned into a Hamiltonian of some well-defined quantum mechanical system, and that's, of course, one of the implicit axioms here. We don't know how the geometry of general relativity changes in string theory or quantum mechanics, but we do believe in quantum mechanics as an absolute axiom, at least at this stage, for the purpose of this talk, for sure. How to accomplish this, how to realize a quantum mechanics with a finite number of degrees of freedom that describes the quantization of this static patch and satisfies holography, is not really known. But there might be some hints how to proceed along the path that would lead to such quantum mechanics. First of all, the positive energy theorem associated with the Killing energy for excitations inside the static patch suggests that we should really be only considering degrees of freedom that are close to the static inertial observer defining the horizon. And therefore, the horizon should be equipped with some perhaps repulsive boundary conditions of some sort. And since the inertial observer breaks the full de Sitter group to a subgroup, perhaps that subgroup should only be realized on the quantum mechanical space of states of this theory. And these states could perhaps be limited to only those states that don't go away from the inertial observer and disappear through the horizon, but stay further throughout their existence inside the static patch. So instead of trying to speculate more about how to accomplish the quantization of the Sitter space, let's search for the Sitter space in string theory. Recalling the observation I reviewed a few transparencies ago, that the R-symmetry group of superalgebra of the Sitter 4 is SO6,2, this is very reminiscent of ADS7. And we, of course, know how to embed the Euclidean de Sitter space into string theory. The Euclidean de Sitter space is just a sphere, a round sphere, and we certainly can describe a round sphere multiplied by the corresponding ADS space, at least for some values of D and P, in string theory. So we are suggesting, essentially, that at this point, one can take the known ADS-CFT correspondence and turn it around. Instead of compactifying on the sphere to obtain the physics of ADS, if we can somehow compactify on this non-compact Lorentz signature ADS to reduce to the physics of the sphere and isolate just the relevant degrees of freedom, a small number n of degrees of freedom describing the physics of the sphere as the Euclidean de Sitter, perhaps that would be the way of embedding Euclidean de Sitter in string theory. Again, the relevant number of degrees of freedom should be a very small subset of all the ADS-CFT degrees of freedom. So let's see how to isolate them. Our proposal would be that if you're interested in the physics of a Euclidean de Sitter space in dimension D, consider the corresponding ADS cross EDS space and consider its CFT dual. Of course, everything is done at some large radius r in some supergravity approximation. And the suggestion we would like to make is that the Euclidean de Sitter degrees of freedom are those CFT excitations that are in their ground state on the ADS side of this direct product of the two geometries. And their counting should perhaps count the de Sitter entropy. So can we really compactify on a non-compact Lorentz signature ADS and obtain the physics of the Euclidean de Sitter space? This would really seem a priori very difficult and impossible, but let's see if we can do that. So first of all, we want to focus only on the zero modes on the ADS side, the ground states. So these happen to be normalizable in space. So if you look at the zero mode, it's not delocalized as it would be in the flat space, but the ADS geometry effectively serves as a potential well, so that the ground state is a normalizable, has a normalizable wave function. And of course, that's true about space, but how about time? We still have the time coordinate. There are two ways, one geometrical and one more physical, of thinking about what to do with the time coordinate. First of all, it's a fact of life that all the supergravity modes have quantized frequencies so that they actually can be projected down to the hyperboloid form of ADS, where you identify periodically the time coordinate with some periodicity, which is naturally the inverse radius of the order of the inverse radius of the anti-de Sitter space itself. And since we want to break supersymmetry, we want to impose non-supersymmetric anti-periodic boundary conditions on fermions. In those cases, of course, there is a mass gap anyway in these systems, and the mass gap is, of course, again, of the order of the inverse radius of de Sitter. So the way we propose to compactify on anti-de Sitter space to obtain the physics of de Sitter from the ADS CFT correspondence would focus on, excuse me. Oh. Okay. So we would like to focus on zero modes in this sense, on that are localized in space and periodic in time, and therefore let's consider a specific example and see whether such degrees of freedom in the ADS CFT correspondence count the entropy of the Sitter space. So simplest case to consider would be ADS 5 cross EDS 5. EDS 5 is a 5-sphere. The horizon is a 3-sphere. And of course, this is very reminiscent of giant gravitons. I don't have too much time to discuss those things here. The area of the horizon is, of course, R cubed in the units of the effective five-dimensional Newton constant. But what is the five-dimensional Newton constant? Since we have compactified on this non-compact space, the Newton constant will be still finite if you restrict to the zero modes, in the sense that you get an effective r to the fourth coming from the integral over the wave function in the transverse ADS space directions, and another power of r from the periodicity in time. So the effective five-dimensional Newton constant is still finite and related to the 10-dimensional Newton constant by this scaling. So for this entropy S of the horizon, we get a prediction. And if you use the CFT, ADS CFT language, you find out that, first of all, the string coupling constant, G string, drops out, and the scaling is precisely like N squared, which is the number of degrees of freedom of zero modes of the associated conformal field theory on the boundary of ADS space. So this is a very good confirmation that we might be on the right track with, we've been able to reproduce at least the scaling of the de Sitter entropy for that case. Let's look at the other canonical examples of ADS cross S, where the sphere is interpreted as the Euclidean de Sitter space. And what we have is, for the case of EDS4 cross ADS7, this is a theory of N M5 brains. For the scaling of entropy, you get N cubed. For the case of EDS7 cross ADS4, again, if you go through the algebra, you get N to 3 halves. And for EDS3 cross ADS3, you get the scaling of entropy as N. In all these cases, what you obtain is the Gibbons-Hawking entropy of the EDS factor of the ADS cross S geometry, scaling exactly like the number of zero modes of the degrees of freedom of the zero modes of the corresponding CFT. So the conjecture would be that the degrees of freedom relevant for describing the de Sitter space in string theory in this picture would reduce to the matrix model of a 0.0 plus 1 dimensional quantum mechanics of the dual CFT on the boundary of the associated ADS space at finite temperature given by the radius of the ADS space itself. And this by itself is suggestive of some also topological theory on the boundary. You are essentially restricting the degrees of freedom on the boundary to those that are insensitive to where you are in that boundary. So you're essentially looking at the topological zero modes of that theory. So this is a finite dimensional matrix model, and all the scalings of entropies work out, at least in those canonical cases. So since I don't have any time left, I believe, I should probably not go over any further details. I just want to point out the remarkable analogy with the giant gravitons that have been recently discussed. If you look at the giant graviton, which rotates with a certain angular momentum around this sphere, it expands into a codimension 2 sphere, and if it has the maximum possible rotation, it essentially fills out the Euclidean de Sitter horizon. And of course, the rotations are just the Euclidean time if you interpret things in terms of the Euclidean de Sitter geometry. So the only issue left in this talk would be a discussion of whether or not we can relate this to the actual Lorentz signature de Sitter. There are various options how to relate the Euclidean de Sitter to the Lorentz signature de Sitter. Either we can keep the Lorentz signature time on the ADS factor and try to combine it with the Euclidean rotations on the sphere into some new time coordinate. And that there are some issues that could suggest some implicit topological twisting in some in combining the two Killing vectors into what is going to be the new time translation Killing vector. Or you can recrotate the ADS factor into a Euclidean ADS and try a double weak rotation to weak rotate the sphere into a Lorentz de Sitter space. But I don't think this strategy would work. It has been tried by many people before and has never produced satisfactory results. One can try another strategy and face the fact that the ADS factor has a Lorentz time and weak rotate the Euclidean de Sitter or the sphere into a Lorentz signature de Sitter and interpret this theory as a compactification of Hall's M star theory or type 2B star theory. But since the very existence or definition of those theories are somewhat controversial, I wouldn't personally like that path either. Or perhaps more pragmatically, one could do the calculations directly in the Euclidean de Sitter and afterwards interpret them by recrotating the results to the Lorentz signature. So we have some other speculations about how to directly obtain Lorentz signature de Sitter. I don't have any time left. There is some cartoon picture that we are trying to establish. Now I'll be happy to discuss with anyone in private. Thank you.
Questions, please.
Yeah. In option C, for where you keep both time coordinates, Is the extra time coordinate associated with the ghost that you mentioned in the supersymmetric Lagrangian earlier in the talk?
Yes, that's related to the fact that the natural R symmetry group, let's say for Desider 4, would be SO6,2. So you are really supposed to compactify on a Lorentz signature ADS if you interpret that R symmetry as the isometries of the compact space. And of course, the negative signature kinetic terms come from that R symmetry. So they are associated with the Lorentz time inside the compactification space.
Any other questions? Okay, if there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker again. Okay, the last lecture.